Okay, welcome everybody. Thanks for, I mean, you know, this is not the Bitcoin talk, right? So, this talk is about user culture and writing history. 1 terabyte, the name is 1 terabyte of kilobyte age. My name is Dragan Espensheet. You can find me like this on Twitter. I will paste it somewhere later for you, so you don't have to type it for yourself. And this is the GeoCities Reborn. And I want to talk to you about how to write the history of digital culture and how to write the history of user culture, especially. When we are thinking about history, we usually think of important, influential documents or artifacts. And for digital culture, we might take the Declaration of Independence of Cyberspace by John Perry Barlow, for example, as a very powerful document. Or the postulation of the Web 2.0 terms by Tim O'Reilly. And we don't really think about a cat video. Alice uploaded a cat video today on YouTube. It's not really what we are thinking about in historical terms. The second thing is writing history on the lines of influential people. Like, we can think about Steve Wozniak soldered a floppy controller in his garage, and then this started the home computer revolution, or something like this. So Tim Berners-Lee invented the World Wide Web. And it's not Bob inserts an AOL CD into his Windows 95 computer. But, of course, we are a bit... This approach has its merits and it has its problems. Let me show you a video on Tim Berners-Lee. Now this will be audio. So, Tim Berners-Lee claims that he invented the World Wide Web, which is, of course, he has every right to claim it. Oh, yeah. I think it worked fine. A lot of low frequencies, which I usually like. So, he has, of course, every right to claim that he invented the World Wide Web, but did he invent the World Wide Web? And also, I already have the impression that every time he's talking, he says back, it was 20 years ago, then it was 25 years ago, and it's almost George Lucasian type. So one day I woke up and I had the concept of the World Wide Web in my head, and then I invented it. When I was in the womb of my mother, I invented the World Wide Web. Because this act of invention is, it's fine, he made a I love him, and he made a great thing. But it's the World Wide Web was actually invented when the cross-platform browser Mosaic was released, and then users started to invent the web. It was not... They didn't follow Tim Berners-Lee's vision at all. And until today, Tim Berners-Lee's visions remain largely irrelevant, apart from the openness of the protocols and the accessibility of the standards. His ideas of the semantic web, for example, are totally irrelevant. And instead, there's a HTML5 working group which consists of a bunch of tinkerers who have no vision at all, except, oh, it doesn't work now, I will hack to make it work. And the hack becomes a standard. And I also think that this kind of TED Talks are very dangerous, so...
Now, 20 years on, Ted, I want to ask your help in a new reframing. So going back to 1989, I wrote a memo suggesting nobody really did anything with it very much. But 18 months later, this is how innovation happens. 18 months later...
Yeah, so I suggest you all go out and start doing this with TED Talks and talks of important people, of visionaries. Because there is this assumption that, we can go on writing history like we used to. But in fact, computers and networks, or as I could say, digital media are mass media. And they are mass media not in a broadcasting kind of way, of course, but in the mass usage. And so digital culture is a mass culture, but it's a very special kind of mass culture where everybody is invited to participate. So, and the idea of an artifact that has historical value becomes more or less irrelevant because so many artifacts are produced all the time and they don't serve the role of a historically valuable artifact, but they serve a value of communication. So if I am making 500 photos a day and everybody is making 500 photos a day, the single photo is not really important, but the act where this photo is going or what I am doing with this photo. So what really is representing digital culture and what can represent it historically is practices and not artifacts, which is also very important for how to historically deal with them. And so the great inventors of technology that are also there, they have tons of books filled with the ideas of great inventors and their stories, how they were sitting in a diner in Silicon Valley and wrote something on a napkin and then they became millionaires and the founders of Facebook, as if these people who are uploading cat videos to Facebook did nothing for Facebook culture. But there is this idea, and since Olya Lyalina, who would talk after me today, she's not here, I will incorporate a bit of her talk into mine because it fits now. It is this idea, what happened with the user over time or with the idea of the user? Because the users were projected by great inventors and they were conceptualized in the forming of computer technology up to a certain point. It starts with Vannevar Bush when in 1945 when he imagined users as scientists, or Douglas Engelbart, who recently passed away, imagined users as knowledge workers, intellectual workers, or programmers, so like people like himself. Vannevar Bush was also imagining people like himself to be users of computers and would design computer systems accordingly. JCR Leadleader thought about real users who are using the computer for something and are not so much interested in the computer himself. Or Ted Nelson was thinking about a naive user who doesn't know how it works, but it's a very very positive term. There's also a lady with a royal typewriter who's composing documents. So these are very good ideas of users. Alan Kay, one of the people who worked at Xerox PARC and worked on the graphical user interface, thought about children artists and musicians where you don't know as the creator of the system what they would do with it in the future. So he thought about children. We should make computers for children. The highest point is 1982, where the user is pictured as a deity in the film Tron. I'm sure you are familiar with this scene, right? I prepared a clip. So yeah, I prepared a clip, but I didn't preload it, so. The thing is, the user...
You believe in the users?
Yeah, sure. If I don't have a user, then who wrote me?
That's what you're doing here. Master Control Program's been snapping up all us programs who believe. If he thinks you're useful, he takes over all your functions, so he gets bigger. And if he can't use you, he sends you down here to the game grid to get the bits blasted out of you. What's your name?
Chrome.
Ram. I'll train you for games, but...
Yeah, so these two guys in the shiny suits are programs. They are inside a computer, and they are suppressed by a master control program. And this this guy here is an insurance calculation program, and he says, if I'm trapped here, my user, Mr. Anderson, will be very angry. And if I don't have a user, who wrote me? Who made me? The user made me. And it's in this film, it's pictured like a religious revolt against the suppressive regime. So they believe in users, and the users have superpowers inside the computer. And from then on, it just went down. Because we are here really still in the era of home computing, of the 8-bit home computing movement. 82, probably, people were using their Atari and Commodore computers. In 1983, Time magazine showed the user as the computer as the machine of the year, and not the user as the computer user, or what people can do with it. And since 1993, our good friend Eric S. Raymond postulated the eternal September. So when AOL opened the floodgates, they are often very cynical ideas about what happened. They opened the gates to the Usenet. And so really newbies and uneducated people entered the internet, entered the news groups, and started to quote whole messages on right below, oh yeah, or something like that. Yeah? And the hacker culture that was in place was not able to absorb this mass of people. The eternal September, it comes from this idea that in September the new semester starts and new people come to the technical universities, and then they are assimilated into internet culture, and then they can be let go. But these people had already made their own culture inside of AOL, and they came, and they outnumbered the hackers. And since then, the hackers have been very protective of their culture and try to save it from this. But also the hackers had much more power than the users. So to the idea of the user, mostly bad things happened after. Eric S. Raymond, for example, later has users in his hackers dictionary only as lamers and losers. Yeah, so these are not people who can write software or something. They have to use what the hackers gave to them. What did the hackers give to the people? The World Wide Web, a very colorful playground where they couldn't do any harm. Yeah, they couldn't. You can't crash a server with an HTML file, and that's so. You can only crash Internet Explorer with an HTML file. So, and that is of no concern to the hackers. So. Interestingly, Time magazine in 2006 had another famous cover where the person of the year is you, and there was a tin foil on the cover so you could see yourself on the cover. And but you might, this was in the Web 2.0 craze, yeah, in the Web 2.0 revolution. And interestingly, it is a YouTube frame around you, so suddenly you are yourself inside of a YouTube frame, which means you are allowed to upload something somewhere suddenly. And so this cover doesn't show the power of users, but it only shows the distance to their medium, a medium that they already made their own in the amateur web era. And then it goes on very badly. There is Don Norman, a very influential interface designer, who talks about users as people. He already thinks to say users, this is so degradatory. Let's just call them people. This was a very influential talk in the user interface design community. And you see that with this in mind, a lot of interfaces are designed today for the dumps, for the people who are idiot-proof interfaces. So Don Norman says, don't say idiot-proofing. You don't design for idiots, you design for people. But this is just a sedative way of saying the same thing as before. Sir Tim Berners-Lee, in general, is not concerned with users anymore, but with his own invention. So these are just the others, them. And Jack Dorsey, the executive of Twitter, probably at some moment also seen this talk by Don Norman, and says, if you catch me saying user to somebody, you should charge me money immediately. And he sees these people as customers. And Bruce Tognazzini recently, he's an old interface designer from Apple, and he wrote a very good analysis that Apple thinks about yet another user. There's usually the naive user and the expert user is what people think about when designing systems, but they also think about the user that hasn't bought the device yet. So the interface design is made for people who haven't bought it yet, so that it looks so attractive that they want to buy it, which he calls the third user. So from the idea of that the user is a scientist or that the user is a lady with a royal typewriter, we come down to I don't know, buyers or people. The thing is that as computers become invisible increasingly, so an invisible computer is like a thing where all the calculation operations happen somewhere else and not on the device, or where in general you're just working with gestures, or you can't go inside the computer, you can't open it up and look what's inside. And a lot of people already use a calculating tinfoil. The computers become so small. It's this idea that they have to vanish. They are just a burden on us. Yeah, so. And with this development, the user is also becoming invisible. Because if you don't have a word for user anymore, you can't talk about it. And users cannot talk about their own role or their role in the opposite to developers or hackers. So that's a problem. And this makes it especially difficult for users to think about their own culture and how to preserve it, because user culture is constantly forgotten all the time. User culture is restarting every time, all the time new, because they are given, I mean online especially, this is where most of the user culture happens. Users are given places to do something, they put all their energy and enthusiasm into it, and then the service is switched off and everything's lost. This happens all the time. This happens with MySpace, this happened with Friendster, this happened with MobileMe, this happened with GeoCities. And usually people are also saying, finally this crap is gone. Yeah? When GeoCities was deleted by Yahoo in 2009. Let me quickly recap the history of GeoCities. GeoCities was founded by Beverly Hills Internet in 1995. It was a free web hosting service where people could sign up to get a few megabytes of hosting space, and they could upload whatever they wanted there. There was just a no nudity policy. But the web was very different back then. And it became super, super popular. The web pages, the addresses were arranged around addresses that would represent the idea of an American city. So there was www.geocities.com, then there was a location, a neighborhood as it was called, and sometimes a sub-neighborhood if the neighborhood was already filled up, and then a four-digit number that would be like a house number. And every of these neighborhoods had a certain theme. So Times Square was, you were suggested to write something about news there or make your website about news, or there was West Hollywood for transgender people or homosexuals, and there was a Silicon Valley for technologically minded people. This was the idea, and every community had a community center, community leaders. They would teach each other HTML and how to optimize images and so on. It was all completely amateur based. So Yahoo bought it in 1999 on the peak of the dot-com mania. They shelled out a lot of money for it, just like they did with Tumblr recently. And then, after 10 years, they found out that GeoCities doesn't make them any money anymore. Nobody clicks on the banners. Nobody views the banners. But still, GeoCities was one of was the location on the web. There was also so many links from Wikipedia to GeoCities because there were some experts there that would just write all their knowledge onto a GeoCities page. And when it was turned off, a lot of Wikipedia articles had to be cleaned up and new sources had to be found for a lot of information. Yeah, in 2009, 26th of October, GeoCities was turned off. But since Yahoo announced it half a year before, there was an archive team forming. Archive team is a group of anarchist archivists or archivist activists, and they go and copy web pages before they are deleted. Of course, they can't go to the server. They can just see what is they can't see what is publicly available. So they made a copy. It was a very improvised process. They just used wget, and they they organized on a wiki who will download what files, which led to a massive file dump of about 1 terabyte in size, which had a lot of files, 2 times, 3 times, under slightly different names or with slightly different last modified dates. It was a very heroic effort. And then, because there's no... Of course, this is legally a gray zone. Yeah, no archive, no library institution would do this, because they would have to ask all the users of GeoCities, can I copy your page? Can I put it into the archive? The archive team usually doesn't care about it. And they copy stuff and release it on Pirate Bay. So they released GeoCities on the Pirate Bay as a very large torrent. The torrent was released in November 2010, and then Olya Lyalina and me, we started to download this torrent. And it was really clear while the torrent was already downloading that Jason Scott, the leader of the archive team, was pushing on the other end. He was just getting the files from all the people who helped in this, with this distributed download, and pushed it into this torrent before it was even... it was a very exciting download, for sure. Yeah, and then we had this huge amount of files, and it was just a bunch of stuff. And the thing is, why could GeoCities be deleted like this? There is this idea that the web doesn't forget anything, but it is clear that it only doesn't forget a certain type of data, and this is data that is well formed. This is data that can be algorithmically manipulated to generate some value, some monetary value. And usually it looks like this. You will recognize it. I have some examples here. So I have here a Google Plus. Can I make it like that? Yeah. So this is my Google Plus page where I edit my profile. And you see here what I'm doing is, it is the old design of Google. I didn't bother to make a new screenshot. I can fill in some forms. I'm feeding a database. I can try to be edgy. Yeah, I can write here, Dragan is in your extended network as my motto. Yeah, so because I'm making a reference to MySpace, because I'm such a historically conscious person. But this, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, I can't escape the system. Google can run heuristics on the input of millions of users and see, this is probably some crap entry, and they can filter it out. And I can hear here, there's also exactly written here, what should I do? What's my profession? Which is, by the way, artist. Where did I work? At home. Where did I go to school? It's all formed data. I can try to put there some crap, but since Google is redesigning everything all the time, if I'm filling out here some crap, then the system will not work for me. So this is a very soft way to push me into behaving well in a database. And I think I looked for a good picture. I think it's more or less like this, yeah. It's just in a white background with some nice gradient buttons and so on. But in the end, I'm just filling out a form on some shitty mainframe somewhere, and they will make some joins to find my friends. And compare it now with this, which is a screenshot from a GeoCities page. It's of the first series of screenshots, which is not perfect, but you get the idea. The information that is on this page is completely ambiguous. There is no database fields. I wonder what's happening here. There is somebody in rage, apparently. And this is an animation of Itchy and Scratchy beating up each other. And there is a cat, of course, running. It's a page from 1997. It was last edited 1997. And then there's here my trombone page. So there's a link to trombone and my family. So I wonder how do these water drops and this rage and the trombone, I mean, somebody who is raging usually doesn't play trombone and doesn't make a family page. So there is a lot of information in here, but you can't make it, you can't normalize this information into a database table. We understand it when we see it, but it's ambiguous for the computer or for a database. Doesn't fit into a database. So this stuff gets deleted. Though it has the most narrative power. It is much, much better than any profile I've ever seen on a social networking site. So the problem with this kind of data is, if you know a bit of database theory, is that databases and computers in general, actually, they work with a principle called data independency. So I don't need to know where my data is stored. The data itself, every bit of data that is isolated in a database, it doesn't have a context. I have to put metadata on the data to understand the context. So if I copy a bit in memory from one point in memory to another, the bit is exactly the same. There is no history in this bit. It's not clear where it came from. This is a powerful property of computers and databases and how the systems are designed. And it enables this algorithmic manipulation, which means that if I'm using Facebook, for example, and try to construct a narration of my life, I feed the database and the narration happens on the Facebook site. In the templates of Facebook power the narration and not my data. And if they change this design, the narration is changed. And this is why you get the outrage every time they change the interface, when they switch to the timeline. So people say, now it tells a completely different story. What did you do to my life? Now I have to rearrange my life again. Yeah, so... and here, with the trombone page, what do you want to do? You can't redesign it. I mean, people at Yahoo, they couldn't go into every website there and replace the backgrounds with something more pleasant looking or something. So, this makes it clear that I will show you now some... Here, I prepared a video for your viewing pleasure with a few GeoCities homepages. It will change every minute, will be another. These are video grabs from a virtual machine. So when Olya and me finished restoring this GeoCities pile to a usable work, and we took part, or we thought a lot about the authenticity of such historic material and what is authentic and what is can be considered not authentic. We also thought about how to narrate in today's web with this material. And it is important, if we want to enable users to understand their own history, we can't put the history away. I mentioned before that digital culture is about It's about practices, about usage. So, yeah, they're nice, aren't they? It's about usage. So the history has to be usable as well. Yeah, everybody else will not be as strong as this man. He's already waving for more than 15 years like this, since this page was last modified. So we have to confront people with the history because nobody is telling the history to them. Instead, or it is even profitable not to have users have a history. I always like this picture. I'm from the south of Germany, and there's an app art award. Do you know this? This is art with apps. So apps as art. And if you go to this exhibition, you will think you are in the 90s again, because everything there looks like CD-ROM art from the 90s. But instead of clicking with the mouse somewhere on the picture and then something happens, you just touch it. So, yeah, this is an illustration. It's like a caricature about what is apps. Or if you think about that you can replace your touch keyboards with other keyboards that have, for example, cursor keys, so you can actually mark words while you type something. This is an innovation. And this innovation can only happen because everything's forgotten. Because, in fact, if you really dig into history, you will understand this is not an innovation, that I can mark a word. I could mark words since the 70s, if I had enough money. And later, I didn't even need a lot of money to mark words, to copy-paste them, or to undo changes. Yeah? I type something on an Android phone, I can't undo the changes, but maybe in the next version, there will be a big innovation coming, and I will be able to undo, and there will be a new episode of Wired, and books will be published, how undo will revolutionize the way we use computers. This happens all the time, but we have difficulties grasping it, because the history is gone. It's deleted all the time, every day. Jason Scott, the leader of the archive team, said in a very good talk at the Personal Digital Archiving Conference, he said that we are destroying history now every day faster than ever, because our whole culture happens inside the digital realm almost. Almost everything. We will end up with files, but we throw them away every day. Yeah, this is also here, I think this is a good illustration, so you understand how users are feeling. So they have something and suddenly they have nothing anymore. Everything gets flat and then it's gone. Ah, there's an iPod. So, yeah. So what we try to do is to confront the people with their history by doing a Tumblr blog, which is actually concerning the obscurity of the material, is quite successful with a few thousand followers. And Tumblr, as you might know, is mainly a service where teenagers hang out and make very eclectic picture combinations. And they are again creating their own culture. And since Tumblr was bought by Yahoo, I don't think they will have much more time left before before their culture is also gone, and we have to... I think Jason Scott is already drumming up his people to copy Tumblr. But we found out it's a good place, and we had to put everything into a form that works for these people. So people today, they like to work with screenshots because it's a self-contained file, and they can post it, and they can use it. They can use it to express themselves on their Tumblr blogs, or they can post it to Facebook and write, oh, look how the internet looked in the 80s or something. I mean, many don't understand what's happening there, but some of them start to dig deeper, and especially if there are Sailor Moon fan pages coming up, they say, oh man, I used to look at this page when I was a child. So, this is a picture stream where this virtual machine is going, I will show you how it's working after I showed you a few examples. Where this virtual machine is going through the GeoCities, through the restored GeoCities, and is making screenshots and is posting one every 20 minutes, which is 72 pictures a day. There's a posting limit on Tumblr. At first, we thought we would just ram them out as fast as possible, but people can't cope with this amount of pictures, and it's of course quite that people at Tumblr are not stupid. They know how many pictures a day you can maximally digest. So we accepted it, and it was successful, and we were able to gain a followership. So, and it contains the original URL, each Tumblr post, and when this page was last modified. So now there was just new year on our 1998, just started a few, I think, yesterday. And here you can see the expressiveness of users, the power they could exert on their medium. And if you're really, these are just the, yeah, sometimes pop-up windows show up. This is a bit of a problem, but this also, we wanted it like this. Also, if there's MIDI music playing in the background, we installed a special plugin that is making a pop-up window that shows the name of the MIDI file. So if you see there Baywatch.mid is playing, then you just need to look at the picture and you understand how it sounded. Or Xfiles.mid is also very popular. And yeah, we are now in 1998, where the pages are already quite advanced and use a lot of graphics. And also they are very, some of them are of course totally broken. But you have to look at each page because it might be that the user never managed to upload the pictures because it was so difficult, or the URLs point to files on the C drive of the Windows computer, which also happened a lot, and people were struggling doing this. Yeah, and here it is. This is really the time before social networking and before Wikipedia, and it happened, and it's still possible. Oh, here Quake fans, Blue Oyster Cult fan pages. So, yeah, and today you think, why should I make a fan page? I would just follow these people on Facebook or something. I can only... here you see, this is Champion GS, so this MIDI file is now playing in the background. I don't know this file personally. But you can understand there's some nice music playing. My name is Hunt and I'm 10 years old. See what 10 years old can do. And also there are a lot of grandmothers, actually, that just post pictures of their grandchildren to show off to other grandmothers, and you can see that they wrote the code themselves, the HTML code, which is of course full of errors. This is absolutely non-normalized data. It's free form. It's ambiguous in every way, which is also nice because it prevents you from immediately going into this digital humanities ideas of making, oh yeah, I will now make a text index on all these files, and I will make some pie charts and line graphs on how much the word wah 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 was used over the years, or how popular was this neighborhood, or this picture of a cat was used 5 million times in GCDs. Because this doesn't narrate, it doesn't explain anything. It is just playing with data. It is boring. Still, I know it's boring, but of course I still like to show this picture, which shows the GeoCities. Oh, yeah. I shouldn't have clicked on this, apparently. Like this, yeah. Which shows a tree map graphic of the 38 million files that are in this torrent. And this is something that people laughed very much. They would say, oh yeah, this is much better than the blinking web pages and this annoying MIDI music. I posted it on Reddit and on Twitter, and people usually say, oh, that's great. I even made something more awful. which is a animation on how it is before, like this, and after the restoration efforts. So there were a lot of circular links and symlinks, especially, or symlinks that were probably on the GeoCity server and resulted in thousands of folders nested into each other endlessly. A lot of people also say, this is much more beautiful. You made something beautiful from these awful amateur web pages. And this is, of course, also a reason why GeoCities was destroyed, because Yahoo thought, oh, well, everybody hates it anyway. Everybody laughs about the GeoCities users, and GeoCities is actually a term for a shitty website. You can say, this looks like GeoCities. What are you? You try to sell this to me. But this is an idea of the professionalization of web design, which started in .com. And you know that the web designers, the professionals, they had to, of course, differentiate themselves from the unwashed masses. And they are still ridiculing communities online which do nothing else but find amateur web pages and ridicule them and write in the guest book, this is the shittiest website I've ever seen. And then somebody suddenly gets a message, oh, somebody wrote in your guest book, your website is shitty. I updated it last time 5 years ago. Now I'm embarrassed. I will delete it. I will go to something professional as Facebook. There's a lot of self-hate in the users as well, which is induced by the professionals. For example, Müllseite, a German community that was committed to ridiculous amateur web pages. I will show some random one. They stopped in 2006 because now it's so difficult to find amateur web pages in general. So there is a animal healing praxis here from a doctor, Tierdolmetscher, and it looks like that. Yeah, and it's like I would never bring my dog to this practice. Yeah, but my horse, but I actually would bring my horse to this practice because I understand this health professional is taking care of their own business, and they think they don't shell out a lot of money to a designer to make them some shiny web page. They make it themselves. It's a completely different sort of commitment. You can also see some bed and breakfast hotels that have excellent websites, but it all has also been swallowed up by database-driven websites like, TripAdvisor and stuff like this. So everything is swallowed up by databases. Because there is no... of course you could write a WordPress plugin, make dog run around my web page or something. But, there would be two people downloading it, and one of them would be your friend. So this is bad. So what I usually did when something appeared on Müllseite, I copied the page before the nasty people could shame it off the web. Here, look at this. It's beautiful. It is, and you have to understand that I don't say it ironically. I really think this is powerful and beautiful. It shows a very different culture and a very different control of or relations of users to their medium. Yeah, so there's of course you have seen this. There is a lot of fidelity issues when we look at this here. But also, there is this idea of authenticity that I want to talk to you about, because this is also a problem with digital culture in general. What is authentic? What should we present to people? There is this matrix here, which is useful, of accessibility and authenticity. So there is a very easy access to this culture, to this archived material. It is by screenshots. And the authenticity is the graphics on the pixel level are right. Every pixel sits correctly. And you can use it on your blog. You can talk about it. You can say, I've seen this Sailor Moon page before. I even made it. Some people say, we already got messages from people who found their own old web pages in our stream. There's also this idea that you could host GeoCities somewhere else and rewrite broken URLs with a browser add-on. This is what happened on RioCities. RioCities is another effort by an entrepreneur from the Netherlands who made his own copy of GeoCities when Yahoo announced it as like a technological challenge to himself. He didn't treat it very in an archival way or something. So he rewrote the HTML. He introduced a banner on top that says "Put Bitcoins here" and so on. But sometimes the copies differ, and what he has in his archive might not be in the archive team's archive, and so it's a good synthetization to make of them. You could also open up a proxy and have people access GeoCities through a proxy that reconstructs it. And then you can then interact with the web pages, really. You can maybe see the animations, listen to the music, go inside, post something you found on Twitter or something. You could use a virtualized operating system and do that on an old Netscape browser like we did it. And you can even use historic hardware to connect a CRT screen to understand why everything was so small. Or you understand why the composition of a page was made exactly like this. You will feel it completely different on a small screen and on a CRT display. The colors also are very different. GeoCities users, they love to use the RGB 100% colors, so they put 00255 something in the color palette, and it blasts your eyeballs out on a CRT screen. It is powerful. And today, yeah, the designers work with muted palettes, and they brought a completely different culture. The culture that was formed in GeoCities was overtaken by culture that was before. I mean, GeoCities, I only say, is a representation of the amateur web. That already, when you go inside it and look at the different things that people did there, this is our research blog, 1 terabyte of kilobyte age. And you, for example, want to inform yourself about what people thought about copyright. You can see that in 1997, they discussed everything already, what people are still discussing today. So somebody made a nice animation. Here, these are a few animations that are rampant on GeoCities and have a copyright notice to them. They are not rampant, they are popular, they are often used. And this one, probably you know, this is a super famous animation. Everybody knows it, everybody has seen it at some point. It was made by Moss Brooks Arts, which is an artist who lives in the United States, and I managed to find him and ask him what he thought, why he wrote a copyright Moss Brooks Arts in this thing, and give me $5 if you use this image. It's in the comment section of the GIF file. And I asked him, what did he think? And he thought, well, what should I think? I had no idea. And he even wrote copyright wrong. He wrote here copyright instead of copyright. And for him, it was just, he was so proud of it. He wanted to say, here, this is, I think this is worth $5. Of course, he said he never received any money. Nobody even can look inside of the comment chunk of a GIF file. And he said he himself, he just took a video file, some AVI file that he found somewhere online and made this GIF from it. So it's not even his creation, and he totally forgot where he got it from. So these are people who really came with a big naivety to technology, with no background, with nothing, and they figured it all out. They figured it out. They learned a lot. But they were forced to think that what all they made is crap. Yeah, this is just an example of very interesting research results. So, I really invite you to look at this and to be proud of your past if you have one like this, and if you and to encourage people to be proud of their pasts. I will show you just a small thing which also shows this, which is about this authenticity thing, why there is this hard access, what I would say is a hard access or difficult access. This is a setup of the system that makes the GeoCities screenshots setup diagram. So there's a virtualized Netscape, there's a proxy server that pretends that the URL www.geocities.com still exists. But this is a very important thing that makes the archive very valuable. It tries to look in the archive that is locally available. Is this file there? Is this URL? Can this URL be resolved? Is there anything behind this URL? If yes, it goes to the file archive and sends this file back to this browser. The browser does the assemblage, the controller script, makes the screenshot and posts it on Tumblr. But if the URL cannot be found, there are so many reasons why it could happen. So we just say, if you don't find it, then just look on the internet. Maybe it's there. Maybe it's on Tripod. Maybe it's on Angel Fire. People were very creative, trying to make a lot of, get the most free server space, the most free server space they can. So sometimes it works, and then the reconstruction happens automatically. But the thing is, if Angel Fire is one day shut off, or is it already shut off? I don't even know. I think it still exists. And there will be a copy. There can be just a proxy chain of archives that will... So it will be possible to overlay the past on the present internet. Of course, this is not a very clear separation of time of the past and the present, but this is in general a problem with digital data because the authenticity in these screenshots here, they look super authentic, don't they? But this is in fact a dress-up. This data is also authentic when I look at it in Chrome version 57 or something. Because the data can be used at any time. And it was used at this point probably not only with Netscape 4.5 that is used here. Netscape 4.5 we used as an expressive means. This is actually also not Windows 95. Because Windows 95 is totally unfit to do any automation. So it crashes. It only crashes. So this is Windows 2000, but configured that it looks exactly like Windows 95. And this browser, it shows web pages that were made in 1996, last edited 1996, where the author of the web page has never seen it in Netscape 4 while authoring it, for sure. But Netscape 4 is the first version that doesn't show error pop-ups all the time that obscure the... that obscure the image. And it's you can't close these error pop-ups automatically or something in the old browsers. And the old browsers also really are crash fests. So Netscape 4.5 is really the first version that is tolerable. So we take data that is timeless because data is kind of timeless. And we give it a makeup so that it looks old. And old-looking, you can't, maybe if you're not very visually trained or if this is not your hobby, you will only see, the fonts are kind of harsh, they are not anti-aliased, everything is blocky, the image is very small, there's dithering used a lot, means old. Yeah. This is, but it's one of the thousands and thousands of ways this data could be presented, but this is an effective way of showing where it's coming from. This is a context that we reconstructed for it. Yeah, okay. So I want to end with I don't have an end here. It's an empty page, but it is important that you take care of your culture. If you consider yourself to be embedded in the hacker community, there's a lot of history written already, but there's also a lot of history that is not written and that is deleted, and usually you have to take care of it yourself or you have to help people saving their history. And this is not about if you have the technological knowledge, because what is saved, The so-called relevance criteria, what is taken into an archive, these relevance criteria are crap, because when we say this is relevant and an institution starts to make all these talks about can we do it, can we copy it, who will take care of it, who will sign the papers, then it's already gone before they started downloading the first GIF. GIF. Don't say GIF. Good. Yeah, thank you. And if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. Yes, a very interesting talk. When you talked about how GeoCities was organized in these places like Times Square,
yeah,
I was immediately thinking about Second Life, which is also like was a very big hype and has much content created by the people that lived there. And I don't know if it still exists.
It still exists. Yeah. It is a good comparison because it's also this idea of the digital city, or which is very abstract in GeoCities and very, very clear in Second Life. And there are also archival projects where people just go through deserted landscapes and record it as a video, or make photos like you would go to an archival site or an archaeological site and you just dug up a temple. You make a picture, so it is very important. Yeah.
If it's okay, I have a second question. You know, with the archiving, I mean, there's always a problem that you can't really store digital data, so it will be there in 150 years. At least nobody tried it yet. So if I have a piece of paper and I store it in the right place, it will like degrade, but it will some parts of it will be there. So do you have any idea how to store digital data for the future, far future?
My idea about it is that it can only work through migration. I mean, there's sometimes in the archival community, there is this clash between migration and emulation. What should we do? But in fact, we have to do everything at once, like it is always on with the computer. Everything is correct at the same time. So... but the thing is, nobody will take care of this data for the people, for the users. I also said people now, I'm such a Schwein. So they have to do it themselves and they have to find ways. And for example, what Jason Scott did with copying the GeoCities thing and putting it on Pirate Bay, this was brilliant because on Pirate Bay, I mean, the torrent is not seeded anymore. Nobody has it anymore. But those people who will be able to take care of it, they have it. And he ignited an online discussion of people that used GeoCities back then. And because he framed Yahoo as a big bad opponent, and I totally buy into this story. And then the users were saying, oh yeah, I used GeoCities, it was nice, or otherwise I used it and it got on my nerves, so I forgot my password and I lost all my dog photos, so can you help me, Jason? And they did it in the contemporary social media, and this is helping to preserve it. If it's usable, it will be used, and if it's not usable, it will be forgotten. So if you put it into a usable form, and this is what we hope to achieve with these Tumblr posts, it can be remembered. But if it's not usable, people will not use it, and it will be forgotten. I think that's the best tactic. It can't be solved technologically. And here, there's another example. What you can do, there's this artist, Ryder Rips, who is also doing speculative archiving a bit, and he just released a record with what he thinks are the best MIDI files ever. And it sounds really nasty. Sounds trashy, but... vinyl is one of the most durable media ever invented. And of course, he now puts it into different contexts and says, hey, this should be played in a club. This is on a vinyl record. And he actually fooled with the equalizer a bit so that this sounds a bit rocky. There's a good video clip of it, of course. You can think about ways of preserving culture like this as well. Oh, yeah. Well, it's a very good video.
Now, that's what I call MIDI Volume 1, featuring Nirvana, Ace of Base, Eminem, Real McCoy, 182, Jay-Z, Radiohead.
Yeah, so what he did is he recorded all with the Microsoft General MIDI synthesizer. And if you, I think the clips are too short that you really hear it, but the sound is really, the snare drum sounds the same in all the songs on the whole record. And the trumpet sounds the same if it's in Ride of the Valkyries or in a James Brown MIDI file. It's always the same. And that's very poetic. Yeah. Is there somebody behind the pillar?
It's me.
Oh, hi.
What came to my mind during all of your talk was an association. It's like you being a mother, having a guest at home, pulling out a picture book and see what...
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
I got an association that I want to tell to express my thoughts on that. It's like you being a mother, pulling out a picture book to a guest at home and telling, see, that's a little Johnny walking the streets. Well, you see, he's dumb, he's running naked, but who cares? It was a funny moment, like it. Well, the guy depicted may be embarrassed. The guest may like the funny story. It's interesting to a very limited audience and probably could be kept to a very limited audience. So I don't want to deny that your talk's interesting, but I want to add up that we start discussions on the right to be forgotten. It's another topic that's rising up.
Yeah.
And on the technical part, I want to add up that we are moving away from a consistent databases to a large-scale spread system that doesn't define models anymore. So what it means is you can update, delete columns, add up each time you may think that's usable.
If I think this is usable?
You were talking about the model that Google Plus sets up on you.
Yeah. yes. You mentioned the right to be forgotten. And, of course, what the archive team did is a legal gray zone. They didn't ask every author of a GeoCities page, is it okay if we copy this? I also didn't ask them, is it okay if I make a screenshot of it? But the I think, of course, this is also people inside the archive team who made the copy. They see it differently. Some see it, we shouldn't have done it, or we should have copied it but kept it for 70 years and then release it. But I think what is important is that this data is relevant now, or that this narration is relevant now, and it serves now a very important point, because we can argue for the right to be forgotten as much as we want, but we still do it from the position of somebody who asks for something. I ask the big surveillors, I ask the big databases, can you please forget me? And what I'm doing is I'm flagged on a picture, and I ask, can you please remove the flag that I'm on this picture? And by this, I create more data. I say, I'm actually on this picture, and I don't want to be on this picture. It is, I think, all this is from a kind of view how users work with their medium, which I think is important to show the alternatives that have existed and that could exist again. There is, for example, NeoCities, which is a very recent project that just opened a few days ago from somebody who was also inspired by this idea that you can just write whatever you want and there's free-form data, there's no database, and you can just go to whatever web page that somebody made here. This is totally new, but it looks this way, but this way is already a kind of... this is a way of saying, this is what I want. I want to be in control, and I don't want this slick world. I want everything to be like I did it, like I made it. I want to be in more control. And when I talked about this history of what the user is pictured in the people's minds, I think GeoCities shows a quite different view on what a user could be and what a user could be in demand, or where the user could be in control. And I think this is important now. And actually, no single person of GeoCities, former GeoCities users, ever complained about this copy. In general, they were happy about it because they lost everything. It's especially from people who are not so good with computer. Yeah. The database thing, the distributed systems, the document-based databases, where I can add keys, whatever I like. it might be it might be interesting, and large-scale systems are also, they are also great, but for somebody who is working in this field, where I have to really fight for every... this is incredibly difficult to work on this field because archives, they are not interested in this because this is just crap. Yeah? This is not relevant. This is not made by an important person. It is interesting to work in the art world. So there was an exhibition in London recently that Ulia Lialina and I were making in the Photographer's Gallery, where we showed 20,000 video captures of GUCD's pages for the period of 2 months. And it is interesting to work in this field, but it's very, no institution wants to take care of it. And if you are alone, or if you are, have a few friends that have the same ideas about archiving, they will not have the resources to run large distributed systems. So we are using Postgres. Postgres is great. I don't think that it would make a lot of difference to use another system. You still have to think what you want. So Postgres runs great. Yeah. Do you want to see more pages? Let's compare NeoCities and GeoCities. Oh, this is great. Yeah, but what you see on NeoCities is that many people don't have links on their pages because they already forgot that the web is about linking, actually. Because most of the systems make links for you. Okay, I will not torture you anymore. Look at all this and think about your blog. Thanks. I'll close.